Deeper questions and the mysteries of this world is our focus. But also keep in mind that not everything we post or present are things that we necessarily agree with. This is not the point. But we highlight theories and new aspects of subjects that we're interested in for the purpose of questioning them, examining them, challenging their validity, and then also at the same time challenging our own current beliefs about them. Do they stand up to scrutiny? Why am I right, or why am I wrong? It's very important. So keep questioning both others and yourself. And also remember, a realization that you don't agree with something is, in my opinion, equally valuable as if you realize that you do agree. End result, you've learned something, you've come closer to your truth, and that is what it's all about. Today we're going to talk about calendars, consciousness, and the shift of ages with Duncan Worldly. He comes from a background in the arts, education, juvenile justice, and community work, but he has been teaching shamanism, dance, and medicine wheel for the last 22 years. His work combines shamanic teachings and techniques with leading-edge psychologies and metaphysics to create something of true value that is both ancient and modern. He combines his knowledge of these in his one-to-one healing and teachings, lectures, workshops, articles, and community practice. He is with us to give us his own unique perspective on the 2012 debate, especially the perspectives related to the indigenous views. The Mayan calendar, as we have come to call it, is a complex area filled with many misconceptions and incompatible projections from our own culture that tend to cloud the issue of this crucial subject. Thank you for contacting us, Duncan, and wanting to come on and talk about your work here on our program. It seems very interesting. I've been reading through some of it here today, so I'm looking forward very much to this. First of all, then, welcome to the program, Duncan. Good to talk to you today.
Yeah, good to speak to you too, Heinrich. It was actually my son, Amagin, who put me onto you. He's been a Red Eyes fan for many, many years, and must have been about probably 5 or 6 years ago he got me involved, and he's always said, Dad, they'd love you on there. Get in touch with Heinrich. So I did eventually.
Really good. Thanks for that. Now, this is really great stuff. Now, give us first a little bit of a background on you pertaining to maybe shamanism, your interest in calendars overall, and the 2012 debate, as we'll get into that a little bit later here.
Yeah, well, this happened to me many, many years ago, Heinrich. I think I've always been someone who was a bit of a searcher. And really, from late adolescence, I started looking in libraries and searching. I didn't even know what in those days, Heinrich, and became quite a big reader and followed various themes. And then back in 1987, I came across somebody who's been on your program, actually, Leo Rutherford, who's now a friend of mine. And I went to one of his shamanic workshops that was focused on the medicine wheel. And it completely blew my mind. It was just one of those occasions that got me going, and very soon after that I followed that up and got on various mail lists and started to really get very enthusiastic about shamanism in general, and this led to me apprenticing to a couple of Native American shamans and studying, and it's really developed from there, Heinrich.
Absolutely. Now, what about the 2012 debate? Was that something that kind of came along with the territory, the interest in the Mayans,
yes,
and all that too?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I read initially The Mayan Factor by Jose Arguelles back in 1987, and actually ended up going to a big ceremony in the Rollwright Stone Circle in Oxfordshire on the night of the Convergence. And I've really followed the calendar debate and issues around that, with a great interest for many, many years.
So what can you say about calendars overall? I mean, I read through what you sent to us, which is a very interesting piece. And I kind of want to run through some of that pertaining to the calendars. There's a very big difference, obviously, when we talk about the Mayan calendar and the calendar that we run through by today. So how would you define them, and how are they different, first of all, Duncan?
Yeah, certainly. Well, I mean, we use the word calendar, really, and the calendar is really, it's a very, very important thing. It's you could call it the hub or the true center of any civilization. It kind of acts as an access point around which everything turns, and in that way, it's very, very pivotal. And it's a way of unifying everything within a culture. So you could maybe describe a calendar as being an agreement that binds everything together. And it also structures time and the way that everything in a culture or civilization is arranged. In particular, how your consciousness is arranged. It defines what time it is, how old you are, what the pattern of your schooling and work and social life is, when you take your leisure time, when and what you celebrate, and it also schedules your income and debt, certainly in our society. So the calendar really affects the ideas of what have happened based on the past and future, and if you look at our culture, particularly, you know, definitions like AD and BC and AD are very, very important. It really defines history and what's important in history. So really, the whole orientation of a calendar affects our consciousness at a very deep level. I'd like to say also that the calendar really, the Mayans don't have a word for calendar. This is very much a Western abstraction. And so when we talk about the Mayan calendar, really what these things we call calendars are actually sacred counts, and they're actually a very, very different thing to the calendar as we might understand it.
Why don't you tell us a bit about the different counts then of the Mayan calendar, the sacred counts? It's comprised of the couple of numbers, 13, 20 primarily, that creates a couple of different cycles, obviously. The Hab, as you mentioned before, we have the Tzolk'in. Just break this down for us, for those who doesn't know, Duncan.
Yeah, sure. Well, the Mayan calendars are really counts, and there's not just one. There's actually about 20 from what I can work out, and all of these deal with slightly different variations and slightly different focuses of time and different themes that the Mayans were tracking. And really, in many ways, you could say that the sacred counts are something called measure. Now, the word measure comes from something called the 20 count, which is it's something I got through the Native American Indian traditions. But it said that the Mayans were the ones who brought the medicine wheel and this particular information into North America in a series of migrations. And on one of these migrations, they brought a lot of information and stuff with them. And this has kind of been held as knowledge within the Native American Indian cultures. And there's something called the 20 count or the earth count. And the number 10, which is really the bridge between the as above and the so below, is called measure. And this is really what these counts are. And really what they do is reflect the sacredness of creation. And these counts were something which were of the absolute highest within the so below, this kind of cult, you know, what's here on earth. And what they did was reflect the highest in terms of creation, so that these counts weren't just like calendars that we have today. They were actually very, very special reflections of creation. And I think very much that what the Mayans were tracking wasn't just time and the movement of the sun around the earth around the sun or whatever, but they were actually tracking creation and cycles within creation itself. And really, when we talk about 2012, it's about the coming to the end of one of these particular cycles.
Absolutely, we're going to get into that a little bit later. If we want to try to get to the origin of this knowledge about the calendar and stuff, I guess we can't discuss that without going into previous cycles, previous ages, and also catastrophe. What would you say about that, Duncan?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for me, very, very much, I think that a lot of things like the medicine wheel and a lot of shamanism really stem from a previous culture, a culture for which our history doesn't really want to talk about or even want to mention at all, really. And, you know, I think that, you know, I'd agree with many, many of your guests, particularly people like Barbara Hancow that talk about this, and, you know, I think her book, Catastrophobia, deals with this very, very well, that there was a some kind of maritime, much more feminine-based culture which existed before, and that sometime between about 13,000 and 11,500 years ago, there was some massive catastrophe that took place, which led to a rearrangement of our Earth as we understand it today, and that a lot of this culture was either completely destroyed or buried under the sea to a large degree. And, you know, people like Graham Hancock and other people in Fingerprints of the Gods detail these things very, very well indeed.
So do you think that the knowledge of the calendar was carried over from that previous time?
I think that it was very much carried over from that previous time, and these things had either been lost or maybe forgotten, or there were some level of that situation that survived. Now, if you listen to what the contemporary Mayans are saying, they say that they actually came from Atlantis, or Mai, as they called it, before they went to their present location in the Yucatan and Central America. And they say that their old civilization was buried under the sea. And they said that that used to exist in and around the area of Cuba and that area of the Atlantic.
In the Caribbean, somewhere around there as well.
Maybe. Yeah, around around the Caribbean, and that actually disappeared below the sea. And there is quite a lot of evidence. I think during the Cuban Missile Crisis, the Americans did a lot of investigations with their submarines around that area because of what was going on politically and in the world. And they came across, during that time, undersea cities, the pyramids and things like that. And there's even BBC articles on the net talking about this, although I haven't heard too much about it on mainstream news.
It's interesting also that we hear a lot about the Mayan from a lot of people who, I guess, are not inherent to the culture, and there even seems to be a little bit different when some of them do speak out. There's a few different voices, like Carlos Barrios, we have the Hundbatsmen, we have Don Alejandro, there's a few people there. I don't know if there's a huge discrepancy between them, if you would say, you know, if it is so, but I guess there is a film being made currently, and hopefully that will give us a little bit more insight to what they actually say.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I mean, the film's called The Shift of Ages. I'm not exactly sure at this time where it's up to. It is due for release sometime this year, but I haven't heard any more. There doesn't seem to be any more information on the website, The Shift of Ages. But, yeah, and I think the voices of contemporary Mayans are very, very important. I think that the debate about 2012 and the Mayan calendar has been very much a Western thing, and I'm not sure that all of the writers about that have ever bothered really to investigate what the living Maya are saying. And, you know, the living Maya are certainly there. There's about 8 million of them living in Central America. In a variety of different countries, probably spread over about 7 different nations from Guatemala through to Mexico. And, you know, some of these people are well-versed in their ancient culture. You know, Don Alejandro is a 13th-generation man shaman, for instance, and I would think that he would actually know quite a bit about this, but lots of Westerners tend to talk about this in very much a Western language, and although they're using the calendar, they're sometimes a little disrespectful in not actually investigating the voice of the contemporary Mayans.
Yeah, that's right. Now, there's many things I want to discuss here and talk about. I think we should, before we go ahead, though, we should stick a little bit more on the idea of the calendar, what the difference is, and also what background we have to the calendar here in the Western world, with the Vatican, with the Gregorian Julian calendar. So let's talk a little bit about that first, and then we can go back to the Mayan calendar again.
Yeah, certainly. Well, our calendars are very, very much calendars in the sense that calendar actually comes from the Roman word calendas, and it's all about tracking debt. This was something that was brought into the 2012 debate a long time ago by Jose Arguelles, who wrote quite a lot about this. And calendars in the contemporary sense, I mean, as I say, the word actually means a device for tracking debt. And the calendar was, I'm not sure exactly what kind of calendar we in this country and in Europe had before the Romans, but certainly the Romans were instrumental in bringing what was in those days the Julian calendar into being. And the Julian calendar was something that was really brought in by Julius Caesar. He even actually lends his names to the months of July and August, as in Julius Augustus. And the calendar is really a bit of a nonsense. If you look at, for instance, the months from, apart from the fact that we've got the two names of the conqueror in the calendar itself as months, September, which is the seventh month, actually means nine, and is based on the Roman number for nine. The eighth month, October, relates to eight, but in the calendar it's the tenth month. The ninth month, November, the eleventh month, November, relates to nine, and December relates to ten, but it's actually the 12th month. So it creates a kind of a dissonance, if you like. The calendars, like the Mayan calendars, are harmonic, and they're balanced. They're usually based on 13 months, which reflects the actual moon, and moon comes from the word month, rather, comes from the word neat. In those calendars, there was usually 13 equal months of about 28 days, and this seems to be something that's very, very common to a lot of older calendars. And these calendars were harmonic in the sense that there was, you could track patterns and cycles much more easily. For instance, if you were born on the 9th of, on a Friday, your birthday would always be on a Friday. And it was much easier to track things like cycles within your own life and within a culture, and to see things on that basis within harmonic calendars. Whereas the Julian calendar brought in this this initial dissonance. And then we have the take up really of the Gregorian calendar, which was brought in by the Vatican. I think it was instituted in 1582, and it really, it was the same as the old Julian calendar. Really the main difference was that the church were having trouble stabilizing Easter, so they brought in the leap year. And it's very interesting because although the Gregorian calendar is very, very clearly a calendar that tracks the movement of the earth around the sun, at the time that they brought this in the, in 15, whenever it was, the church was still saying that the earth was the centre of the universe, mm-hmm. and Galileo, for instance, in 1616 was actually put on trial for heresy, and I think he was under house arrest for the rest of his life as a result of saying this. But the church had already brought in a calendar that was clearly tracking the orbit of the earth around the sun at that time, which is rather strange when you think on it.
Yeah, absolutely. So if a calendar is a reflection of an effort to try to keep things in order, basically, try to keep track of not only the creation itself, but also what happens within a community, within a society, a city, what have you, we have a situation where the one we were given by the Vatican, I would say, creates, or maybe it's rather a reflection of a chaotic consciousness, wouldn't you say? It's there to definitely upset us in some way and actually destabilize us from the natural rhythms of the earth and the creation cycle.
Well, absolutely, Henry. I don't think you can prove this exactly, but I would say that the Roman calendars, both the Julian and the Gregorian calendar, are very calculated acts to try and separate us, the people, from the cycles of creation, because the powers that wanted to do that wanted to bring in their new world order, which was based on money. And really it was a way of continuing the domination, the military domination that large cultures like Rome had, they went out and conquered. And the next phase really was to bring in like a calendar to try and break the people's separation of the land so they could be exploited more easily. And the dissonance and other things was very deliberate, I think, in that way. And, you know, Arguidas a long time ago said very, very clearly that, you know, the calendar has caused things like crime and the chaos and disruption in our society because it is that central hub of our culture. And when you've got a central hub which is a nonsense, really, and is based around the fiction of money, and I think Arguidas was responsible for saying that what the Gregorian and Roman calendars brought in was the idea that time is money. And, you know, for sure these days, don't we know that?
Yeah. Now, let's go back then to the Mayan calendar again. We have a few different cycles of time, if we can put it that way, or mm-hmm. you know, we have a kin, a urinal, we have a tune, we have a cat tune, and then of course a buck tune. And I want to try to, if you want to, you can detail those, how long those are, but we do want to get into the discussion about the long count and what that actually is measuring or, mm-hmm. or counting, Duncan.
Yeah, well the long count is actually it was called a long count because it was the longest calendar that the Mayans actually had. It was the longest period of time they tracked. I mean, there is other things which has appeared on some of their on their stonework, which is that have been called calendars. But these are more a listing of dates. And but the calendar, the largest calendar they had was the long count. And as you say, it was built up by these different series. But really, the central part of the Mayan calendar is something called the Zolkeng, and it's really built on a lattice of using the numbers 13 and 20. And for the Mayans, the number 13 is very, very important. And I think also this was something that wasn't just Mayan. You can see reflections of the importance of the number 13 in many, many different cultures. And 13 is really it's the way creation itself organizes itself, and it's the way time organizes itself is in units of 13. The original Mayan counts would have had, you know, they actually divided time up into 13, into kind of like a 13-hour day, and then there would be smaller and smaller units, all based on 13. And this thing was very much disrupted it actually started to happen in Babylon, a long, long time ago, when and again, this is information that comes from Jose Arguidas, and he says that a group of males, warriors and priests, subverted the old feminine calendar, which was based on the number 13, and reduced it to 12, and they stole and hid the secret of the 13th to use for themselves, but used the 12 as a way of, again, creating dissonance and obscuring the truth in people.
And hence controlling other people, you'd say, maybe.
Well, exactly. I mean, if you look certainly in Britain, we have this thing about Friday the 13th being very, very unlucky. And when you look at that, 13 is actually a number that represents the goddess and the feminine in many of the Native American and Mayan camps. And Friday is the only feminine day of the week based on your Norse goddess Freya.
Ah, I see.
So because it is a double feminine, it obviously is very, very unlucky.
Interesting. Harmonics, important thing in how things are created. The musical scale, if we go from C to C, we have the 13 right there, Duncan.
Well, that's right, and that is again a very, very important part of the 13. As you say, if you take a scale between and use all the both the white notes and the black notes on the piano, you actually have a period of 12, and the 13 takes it back into the next chord. And I believe that the science of the old world, if we can call it that, and I'm not talking about Rome and Greece, I'm talking about the civilization of, you know, that we may perhaps know as Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Atlantis was probably a culture as a whole rather than just a place.
Yeah.
But the culture of Atlantis or the old world, I think, was very, very much based around harmonics. And they saw the universe very much in terms of vibration. And I think they had a very, very advanced science. I think this is how they managed to build a lot of these huge, great monuments, was using sound and vibration as a way of maybe making things light or maybe changing the nature of matter through harmonics and creation. Through harmonics and vibration. And the 13 is very, very important in that. And again, the other number here is 20. And again, this is very important. 20 is like the build. 13 is like how creation unwinds itself in terms of cycles, and the building blocks within that tend to number 20. And again, 20 is a very, very common number in many cultures. Many of the Mayan counts are built on the number, 1 through to 20. Their whole mathematical system was built on that. And there's good evidence that, the Celtic culture and other cultures used the 13 centuries. You look at the Ogham alphabet, which some people have called a tree alphabet. It has 13 months. And also, there was actually 20 letters as well. And 20 is one of those numbers, that's very important. Even with our own bodies, we have like 20 major amino acids that really the building blocks of our physicality.
Of our DNA, that's right. Now, the 13 times 20 is that 260 day cycle, right? Isn't that the hob, or what is that called again?
That's the Vulcan, which is the way the Mayan calendar works. It's a mixture of several different calendars. You have something like the 13 months of 28 equal days plus an extra day, and in modern variations of the Mayan calendar, which has been produced by people like Jose Arguelles, uses that kind of structure. But really, the Vulcan is like it works inside the calendar.
So that's right.
You've got the yearly calendar, which is based on 13 months or 28 days with an extra day, sometimes called a day out of time, or would be a special day. But within that, you'd have this continual cycle of the 1320 or the 260 days, which runs within that. And that was also related to, each day had all the 20 numbers had day keepers. So the day would have a number and a name. And it was very, very influential in Mayan culture. So, for instance, if you were born on a particular day, you would have an identity and probably even a name based on that day keeper.
Yeah.
And then as you grew up, you would have a job and a career based on the energy that you were given from that calendar.
Hmm.
And, so everybody in the Mayan culture knew who they were.
So this is, if we go back again to the origin and for a moment then, let's just call it Atlantis to make it easy, I guess, for people.
Yeah, yeah.
The old knowledge comes from Atlantis, and what we today then have been able to dig out from the Mayan culture and some of the other ones around the world as well seems to be a remnant then from this older civilization. And what's interesting here is that no matter how much the Vatican actually did try to eradicate it all, that's what I can gather from what they try to do, achieve it, we still have some of that coming through to us today with various codices and like the Dresden Codex, which miraculously was saved during the fires there in the Second World War after that in Dresden.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have this knowledge has now finally been dug up, if you will, Duncan, and we can get some of the remnants of it. And this is a reflection then. And maybe this is even just minor parts of what actually was known. What do you think?
I think that's absolutely true, Heinrich. And also, I think that actually in the Americas in particular, before us Europeans went over there and destroyed a huge amount of things as well as a huge amount of people, that there was more than just remnants surviving. I think that if you listen carefully to what current day Mayans like Don Alexandro are saying, they're saying that that their culture, that the Mayans are actually a level of priesthood within Atlantis, both them and the Kogi, who were allegedly an even higher priesthood, actually moved with their people on boats to the Yucatan, taking with them probably all of their culture. And I'm sure people were lost in the changing times. But what they actually took with them was the culture itself, the Atlantean ideas and culture, And so I think that it was a lot more than fragments. I mean, what we've got today are just fragments because, you know, the Vatican in particular went out and created a huge act of genocide. I mean, if you listen to or read, somebody called David Stannard has written a book called The American Holocaust. I mean, he estimates that the genocide involved something like 100 million people.
Mm-hmm.
In the Americas, and they particularly targeted anybody who had knowledge. And the Vatican also proceeded to do the same thing previously to the Gnostics and the European pagans.
That's right.
You know, John Lash has an awful lot to say about that.
That's right. No, exactly. They've been all over the world, and what happened in the Americas is just more in the consciousness because it happened later. I mean, all of that happened in Europe before that time, you know, so...
And it does seem like, without doubt, a deliberate effort to destroy a particular stream of knowledge.
So I want to get into the idea of the long count again. But we're talking about 5,125 years that it counts.
I mean, we do that because we work in years, but the Mayans were much more interested in harmonics and harmonic numbers. And for them, they worked things out on 360 days, so that the ton, which is the largest, the count is itself, rather, actually works out to 52,000 of their 360-day years. And there's a lot of confusion here. There's a lot of, I think, rather arrogant anthropologists and people who go around the world, and they talk about this harmonic number of 360 as primitive people trying to approximate the proper calendar of 365 days. And they actually completely miss the point that the Mayans, they didn't work with decimals, they worked with whole numbers, and they were very, very interested in something they called harmonic numbers. And these harmonic numbers, these are the numbers that actually exist within the long count, you know, 20 days, 18, numbers like this, 144, which is to do with the harmonic of light. And, so these numbers were very, very important to them, and they weren't trying to approximate something. They were actually using it in a very, very different way. And they had a very different notion of mathematics than we currently have today.
That's right. The flow of creation is obviously the most important thing, but the fact is also then that it is, the long count is connected to the idea of cycles of the sun, because this seems to have been a lesson previously in terms of catastrophe, if you will, when the sun renews itself. Now, what do you know about this, and what does the mythology say about the new sun coming in, and again, how close we are to that right now?
Well, sure. Well, it sounds like the sun actually has some kind of transformation every 5,200 of the Mayan years, or 5,126 of our years. I think Maurice Cottrell and I think you've actually interviewed him, haven't you?
Yeah, for sure.
He talks about this, and he's detected some kind of cycle in the sun that seems to work on the number
26.
So 10 cycles of that actually equal this magic 260. And see, the Mayans themselves say that they've actually lived through two of these major changes that we're predicted to go through, in 2012. The last one was the part of the Atlantean cycle, which they survived, and there was another one before.
Tell us here what we're in for, and how. I mean, this is impossible to know that it's going to happen on the day of the 21st and all that. And as you might know as well, there are different interpretations of when the calendar actually ends, and also some debate out there if this is applicable at all. But in your view, then, Duncan, what does this mean in 21st of December, and what could happen in your view there?
Yeah, sure. Well, whether anything actually will happen on the actual date of the 21st of December, I don't think anybody knows until we get there. And even if it doesn't, it doesn't mean to say the Mayan calendars are wrong. I was listening to your interview with Dranzolo Mekizovec not so long ago, and I think he's got it pretty much right. And Dranzolo is somebody who's very, very much in touch with the indigenous people of the world, particularly the Mesoamerican people like Mayans. And what he was saying about the masculine being the cycles and the mathematics and all that kind of thing, but it's the feminine we're waiting for. It's about the right time within this period. And we've already, you know, the Mayans and the Hopi and most of the people who carry these processes now agree that when Comet Holmes exploded in, I think it was 2007, and created this event that was actually bigger, a blue event that was actually bigger than the sun, that this was the fulfillment of prophecy and to do with what the Hopi and the Mayans are called the Blue Star Kachina prophecy. So since about 2007, we've been in the zone. And from what I hear, it's as John Valet says, you know, this could go on until about the end of 2015. But there's no doubt that we are going to have some kind of shift. Now, people like Don Alessandro, or Wandering Wolf, as he calls themselves, say that the sun is actually going to go into, it sounds like some kind of fourth-dimensional channel as it crosses this galactic elliptic or whatever it is, and that we will actually experience a time of darkness. I've heard various figures put to this. Some people say 30 hours, some people say 70 hours. And in this time, that there will be darkness. Now, whether the sun will actually disappear or whether the magnetism that holds our consciousness and things together actually is so loose that we actually become blinded and unable to see is unclear. But there will be this period. But when the sun shines again, it will be a new sun. This will be the sixth sun, the sun of flowers. And the Mayans sound as though they're really looking forward to this. That this is going to be an amazingly beautiful event where we are going to have our DNA is going to be upgraded or at least switched on. And people like the Quero and who are a tribe that actually escaped the Spanish completely, they weren't discovered until about 1949, and they managed to live in the high Andes at above 14,000 feet and completely avoid the kind of the South American Inquisition and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the Queros, I think they're called.
The Quero.
Yeah. Yep. Interesting.
And but they're saying that the current sunspot activity is what it's going to do is going to switch on what scientists call our junk DNA, and that we are going to evolve very, very rapidly. And this is something coming from many, many of the contemporary Mayan leaders or the spiritual leaders say that we're going to have a big upgrade and we're going to evolve rapidly. And also that there's going to be a movement from the head or ego-based consciousness and a return to heart-based consciousness. And it sounds like in the last shift, this one that happened about 13,000 years ago, this major earth change, that through that and the resulting trauma, we were moved from a consciousness based on the heart, which was very much about a oneness and a much more feminine form of consciousness, that we're going to be shifted back to that kind of consciousness. And it's likely that the last shift and perhaps the resulting traumas of the earth changes that were involved in that were responsible for the creation of the human ego and all that that brings.
Mm, right.
And, you know, our society is very much a society of the ego. We're all stuck in our separateness and you know, a very defensive mode,
well,
if you like. The ego is really just a defense mechanism.
Well, exactly, and that would be, you know, that would explain quite a bit, and it also would mean that it's just simply a function, if you will, of maybe not only the brain, but just the way things turn out, because we were so traumatized by this event. We've shattered our consciousness, if you will, and maybe then if there is a rebirth of the sun, that this will in some way help to heal that process again in one way or another. But what's interesting, very interesting thing that you wrote in your document you sent to me is about this idea that the magnetics might change. I want to talk a little bit more about the sun a little bit later, and again, if they're inherently connected, we need to get into it right away. But the amnesia that Barbara Hanclough and others talk about, that happened between the shifts of the ages, might be explainable then with a magnetic flip, because if our consciousness is tied to the magnetics and this has a reverse or a flip, then that could literally mean just like your hard drive would be swiped clean from memory if you do a magnetic an EMP on it or a magnetic swipe on it, right?
Yeah, I think that's very much the thing. And I think magnetics are probably a lot more important in terms of consciousness and the world than current science likes to recognize. I mean, it was actually a very big thing in the 19th century, which got kind of put aside with Einstein and other people's ideas about physics, which, you know, are being challenged quite considerably these days. And yeah, I think that you're right when you talk about the idea of our consciousness just being white, maybe. You know, this could certainly happen. And, you know, if the magnetics change, we might have a completely different type of consciousness.
Could we, Duncan, could we wake up then one day? I mean, again, it doesn't have to be the 21st of December. It could be, I mean, again, these are huge cycles. We don't know how this plays out. Even a few hundred years are kind of small, you know, in the time scopes we're talking about here. But in any regard, could we wake up one day and basically don't know who we are because there's been a change or a flip in some way, either because of the sun or the magnetics on the Earth?
Yeah, I think that may be likely. Whether or not we wouldn't know who we are would be, I'm not so sure. Maybe we would actually wake up and realize who we truly were.
Yeah. Well, that would be interesting.
Well, absolutely, Heinrich. And, you know, I think if we really realize as humans who we are and what we're part of, instead of thinking that we're just this, this kind of blip in the universe and the only life form and the only species and, you know, I mean, that's part of our current problem is we've become so unaligned from creation itself because creation has been taken over by the church and we've had such a ridiculously stupid idea of creation and creator. So, yeah, I think it's highly possible that we may wake up when this transformation happens and we actually truly know who we are. And the main point of this, they say that when our genetics are turned back on, or our full array of genetics are turned back on, that we will actually start to remember our solar lifetime. And, you know, I believe it. I'm an eternal being. I believe that I've been on this earth many, many, many times. And I believe we all have. And, you know, maybe not even just on this earth, but I've had many, many lifetimes. And but maybe we'll start to remember the essence of this and who we truly are, and then we can start to get back into alignment, if you like.
Let me read a passage here from the article. Every 5,200 years, there is a new sun. This happens as we cross over the center of the galaxy during this time. During this time, the Earth will pass through the central axis of our galaxy, which is like a permeable tube. When we pass into this tube, we will be unable to see the light of the sun, and this will create 60 to 70 hours of darkness. Mm-hmm. When we will be unable to see. During this time, the nature of the sun will be transformed and reborn. As we emerge from this tube, we will see the new sun. So why? What would explain this in your view? Why is this? Would this be happening?
I mean, that's actually a direct quote from Wandering Wolf or Don Alexandro, as he's known. And I think a lot of this will be to do with magnetics. And also, I mean, in our world today, this world of the ego, we forget how important things like the sun are. I mean, I've read stats that say that the sun is something like 99.whatever% of the mass in our universe, in our solar system. And in the native world, in the indigenous world, the sun is not just some nuclear machine. He's called Grandfather Sun, and he's a living being with an amazing intelligence. The whole solar system is seen as part of the body of the sun. So if the sun goes through a major transformation or initiation, if you like, and the sun changes its nature and changes it, what it broadcasts, we're all going to change. I mean, I think in the end, you know, lots of people talk and worry about 2012, but I mean, in the end, we're a very small fish in a small pond compared to the sun. And if the sun was to change its magnetic nature, we'd just realign like iron filings on a bit of glass when you stick a magnet underneath.
Yeah, what the insufficient field of science, or the incomplete field of science, has been telling us for quite a while. And again, interestingly enough, this field, after all, actually comes out of the church in one way or another. If you look at Calvinism, etc., it's something that's kind of evolved into the scientific field. And at the end of the day, it's almost like they tell us that we're just floating on a lifeless rock. Nothing is alive, you know, everything's just inorganic, this nuclear machine. And how does that shape, do you think, the people who are born into a system like that with that understanding?
I think it shapes us horribly, and it completely distances us from the livingness of everything. You know, the shamanic worldview and the worldview of many indigenous people is that we live in a stream of livingness, that everything around us is alive, that the earth is alive, the sun is alive, the rocks are alive, the plants, the animals, the humans, all of these things are alive, and we live in a great interactive stream of livingness. Now, when you believe that everything is dead around you, and that humans, because we have an intellect on a top of the intellectual tree, if you like, it allows us to behave in the most disgusting ways. And you know, we're really destroying this living planet. I mean, the worry that many of the Mayans and other indigenous peoples who talk about these things have is that when these changes come, we've made such a mess of this earth that we are disrupting things so terribly. I mean, just in my own lifetime, Heinrich, you know, we've lost about 50% of the life forms on this planet. You know, we've managed to pollute the water cycle at every single level. We've polluted the air. You know, we're setting off atomic bombs in the living body of this beautiful living planet. And we've turned everything into money. You know, everything has a value, you know. And you know, we're selling our own grandmother in terms of the indigenous view. And so that distance, and particularly the thing that science, and I'd absolutely agree with you that although science in some ways was a reaction against the church and the dogmatism of the church, in many ways it was the same theme, it was the same misogyny, if you like. And if you listen to what some of the early founders of science were saying, it was exactly the same as the church. They hated the earth. They wanted to kind of torture and force the secrets of creation from the body of the earth. And as you say, you know, those connections with Calvinism and other things, it was really business as usual with a slightly different emphasis, in my view.
Yeah. Now, this, well, some people call it the sixth extinction event, that we're basically smack in the middle of it, and as I think partially it could be obviously attributed to man's activity, but it also seems to have been going for a long time, right? There's the whole Holocene extinction, as it also is referred to, as like between 1500s and up to now and continuing. So I guess my question is, could it be part of another cycle that we just happen to be in right now? Because again, before we were doing all the stuff that we're doing right now, previous ages, there were also major extinction events, and it just seems to be part of the cycle of the Earth in some way.
Yeah, I think overall we've lost touch with these kind of cycles, and you know, even if science today knew about it, I'm not sure that the powers that be would want to tell us. You know, I mean, I'm fairly convinced that the Vatican and other powers knew about what was going on in South America. When they went there, and they took a lot of these documents, and they have this information, but they're somehow unwilling to share that with us. And again, you know, it's the same as Barbara Hancloud points out, that in her book Catastrophobia, you know, in this last series of Earth changes, you know, the whole solar system may have been changed, and the asteroid belt and other things may have been formed by some big solar flare out of the constellation of Vega. And these things happen within the universe itself, and, you know, these things may have happened many times before.
So even if the sun is changing and might be going through a period of darkness that extends, you know, some people say one day after 3 year day or a week, some cases, does that necessarily mean that we're also in for a big catastrophe on the Earth like the previous ones we've seen? I mean, are we in for something that destroyed Atlantis, or are we talking about something minor here? What do you think?
I think it's hard to say in some ways. I mean, I take my information, and I respect a lot what, again, you know, as I said, the indigenous people, the Maya, are saying, and they're saying to a large degree it depends on us. I think there's a huge, that human beings, from the indigenous shamanic point of view, the humans have a function here on Grandmother Earth, as they call it, and everything here actually has a function. So the forests are seen as the lungs of the earth, and the humans are seen as the dream of the earth. What we do is we dream for Grandmother Earth. And this reality which we create, which we see it seems very much as a dream, and we're dreaming here. And I think in the end, it's going to be very dependent upon what we as humans are dreaming and what we decide to dream. And there seems to be a lot of energy and effort put into the world by the powers of be to try and disrupt this dream and to turn it into something trivial and to make it all about money and things like this. I think it's very much about it's a numbers game in the end. Have you heard of something called the Institute of Heart Math?
Oh, sure. We've had Howard Martin with us from...
Okay. So, I mean, I saw some very interesting stats where they were saying that when you get people who sit in a coherent, heart-based vibration and basically meditate from the heart, that a very, very small percentage, they're saying something like, I think it's the square root of 1%, can actually change levels of violence and levels of terrorism and things within a community. And the stat I heard, which is quite amazing, is that in a population of the Earth, which is approaching something like 7 billion at the moment, it would only take 8,000 people to actually start affecting this. And one of the kind of prophecies or theories I heard a long time ago was about something called 144,000, which is a number which exists, you know, and the Jehovah's Witnesses have this, it's the number of petals in the crown of the lotus in Buddhism. But they say that it takes 144,000 enlightened rainbow warriors to change the dream on the Earth, on this planet, and that this will actually affect the morphogenetic field of humanity. And I see these things as signs of hope in the present age, because I think if we don't do that, it's, if we carry on just with this reckless polluting and killing the Earth and ripping things out of mining and, these kind of disasters that happen, like, that big oil spill that happened off the coast of America and things, these things are, the Earth has to do a lot more to correct the balance.
Absolutely, and then when you look into it, you get even more upset because it actually seems like these things are planned as well. So meaning, if men actually were true stewards of Earth and could take care of it, still means we could actually, to a certain extent, have continue with an idea of a technology, if you will, then or being on that line, but doing it right instead. You know, in this case, it's almost like it's so ruthless, and it's almost again that it's some kind of either conscious or unconscious desire to destroy the Earth that you talked about before in terms of the church and all that. So it's almost like some people are still stuck in that mindset, which is kind of very strange to me. I don't know what's going on.
Well, I absolutely agree. I mean, and you're right. Some of the original church fathers absolutely hated the Earth. They hated women, and they hated the idea that, that we were somehow sinful just because we were born from a woman. And again, this kind of escape from our own humanity, which seems to be going on with the whole transhuman agenda and other things, is all part of that. And in the end, I think in the end it's based on fear, Heinrich. And people say that we really have a choice in this time of choosing between love and choosing between fear. And I think in the end it may actually come down to something quite as simple as that. And fear is an energy of the ego. And whether this is all, it's all part of some very complex conspiracy. I mean, you look at it sometimes and it looks very logical to me that it's like that. But it may just be an expression of the human ego, which is a very fear-based thing and a form of consciousness. And in my view, hopefully, we will have this change. And this change is about realignment. It's about a new message, and I think if the sun changes its energy, these kind of things will not be able to persist.
Okay, well, this is what I want to talk about in the second hour with you, Duncan. I want to ask you more about the nature of the dream, or the nightmare, some people would call it. On certain days, I would agree with that, and how we wake up from that and realize what's truly going on. And I think partially this is about becoming whole, realizing, as you said before, who we are, and hence walking away from this very troubled mindset which shapes us and probably also shapes our reality around us. Now, in the meantime here, though, before we take a little short break, let's talk about your website and give us that, of course. Do you have any writings in book format out there or anything like that, Duncan?
Well, I've just actually completed something today, which I had to put on my website quite shortly, which is... What we're talking about in this interview is I sent you something called Calendars and Consciousness, which I had published in a magazine called Sacred Hoop, which is an amazing shamanic magazine. It's been going for a long time. Nick Woods is the editor of this, and me and Nick go back a long, long while. I actually wrote some of the first articles for this magazine. And I've written an extended PDF, which I'll have for sale on my website hopefully next week, which deals with the nature of what we're talking about. I call this new PDF the birth of the new sun, ego death, and the rise of the feminine. And also on my website, I have something. It's a year course, which is actually a 2-year course now. It's something that you can sign up for individual years, and this is called The Cartography of the Invisible, and it's an online, very, very in-depth course based on the medicine wheel and that particular type of spirituality. And what you get if you sign up is my personal tuition online through email. Every month you'll get a workbook, a series of exercises, and lots of ceremonies to do.
And what's the URL, Duncan, to the website?
Oh, the address of the website is www.medicinewheelshamanism.co.uk.
Absolutely excellent. We're going to have this up on redicecreations.com as well. But again, then medicinewheelshamanism.co.uk. And is there any? There's a lot of stuff on the website there as well where people can find out more. You have a section there on the Mayan calendar and some of that stuff as well, workshop links and everything else. Where do people go to click into the PDF that you talked about there?
I'll make that clear on the homepage, on the index page when it goes on. There'll be a link there.
Really good. Okay, well, Duncan, we're going to take a short break here then. We'll return with more in just a bit, so do stay with us. We'll be right back. Red Ice Radio has some great programs coming up for you. Next up is Kevin Annette for an update on a historic lawsuit against Church and Crown. Then we have Lauren Coleman on John Holmes and the Aurora Massacre. After this, we have Joseph Farrell, John Irvin, William Dean Garner, Linda Moulton Howe, Mark Grant, Rosa Corey, Daniel Pinchbeck, Walter Burian, also Randall Carlson, Joel Gilbert, Ron Keller, Freeman and Jamie, and also Charles Upton, to name a few. If you enjoy what we do, don't forget to check out our archives for more. We have over a year of radio available for you, for free, no commercial interruptions, and an ad-free website. Much more of this is available in our members section. And there is where we are going to proceed now with Duncan Worley to discuss The Poisoned Dream. This is about Don Miguel Ruiz and the four agreements to shift out of the poisoned dream which we currently are living in. Duncan also talks about the current state of our collective consciousness and the soul of humanity. We speak about how humanity would respond to events such as a catastrophe, changing magnetic fields, or a solar-related event. This could be a rebooting process to turn things around and get humanity back on track with the natural order. Don't miss our two. You can attain a membership at redicecreations.com. Click into one of our options, follow the instructions, and you'll get instant access to our members area filled with goodies for your mind and spirit. Thank you for staying with us.